seeing cases like this on different levels is also why we are calling for the best practices to be used with our police departments. We want to make sure everybody gets home at the end of the day, and that no officer can be judge, jury, and allow the system to be accountable. But it's very clear in the interactions that Crystal and so many other likely young Black girls are experiencing, they're being treated as less. They are being treated as less than, as they are advocating for help, as they are trying to hold individuals accountable who, at that time, they are holding a grown man accountable. And our police departments right there in Kenosha did not live up to their duty to protect and serve.
And court documents show that there were at least 20 videos that he took of his victims, young Black teenagers. Well, that does it for our show. I want to thank David Bowen, Wisconsin State Representative in Milwaukee, and Ann Brannigan, reporter for The Lily at Washington Post. We'll link to your piece after Rittenhouse protesters are asking, what about sex trafficking victim Crystal Kizer? Happy birthday to Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Mr. Nana now, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KABU. Consider adding KABU to your will, or add KABU as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KABU along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KABU to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kabu.fm to notify us of your plans.
Good morning to you. You are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO FM in Portland, Oregon, 90.7, in the Hood River region, 91.9, and 104.3 in south of here, Corvallis, Albany area. And it's always on KBOO.fm. via the World Wide Web. Today is Monday, the 29th of November, and I am Cecil Prescott. This is More Talk Radio, an opportunity where we can gather and exchange ideas, begin to have conversations that are meaningful and hopefully transformative. Conversations which will allow us not only to get to know one another, but to find ways in which we come to mutual understanding and hopefully can create a world in which all can live better. Our phone numbers here are 503-231-8187. For many of us, this was a longer weekend than normal. Here in the United States, there was a holiday on Thursday. Many people had Friday off and, of course, the weekend. So for many of us, it was a four-day weekend. It was an opportunity for many people to gather with friends and family. Hopefully for good times. Sometimes some tensions arise when you gather with friends and family. But for many, it was an opportunity to gather and to make time to be with people that you may not have seen for a while. So for those of you who had the opportunity to together with friends and family and to renew acquaintances. I hope it was a uplifting and wonderful experience for you. At the same time, we must recognize that for many people, holidays, especially this time of the year, holidays are difficult. The way in which people gather may be difficult, and also many people suffer from depression this time of year. So while there are many things that are joyful and make good times for many people, I think we always should be aware that it may also be a time of disappointment, sadness, and depression. Hopefully, you will be able to make connection with those resources that help you in difficult times. And always be aware of those around you, those who might need some attention, and whether or not some people might need some help. So, in ways in which they're meaningful, make sure you continue to watch out for one another and create a better community. Today is the 29th of November, and Celeste, how was your weekend? Celeste is here, but her mic isn't on quite yet. So as we wait for her mic to work out, I'll just continue a monologue here until Celeste's microphone is working. So yes, as I was saying, that this is a time of holidays, a time of family gathering, and a time for people to know one another. We have a few topics we would like to address.
I put myself in I won't say a self-induced
bubble. Oh, we lost you again. What a mystery. She put herself in a da-da-da. We have to wait to see where Celeste placed herself this weekend. The mystery continues. Stay tuned for the adventure of the wild adventures of Celeste Carey. As we left, we heard she had placed herself in a... We're not quite sure. However, they're working. Monday mornings, normal technical difficulties here in the studio, and after a long weekend, maybe the equipment need to be renewed or re-energized, such as all of us.
Okay, can you hear me now?
We can hear you. You put yourself in a pop, pop, pop.
Okay, am I coming through yet?
You are coming through.
Okay, for Cecil, apparently I'm not coming through.
No, I can hear Celeste. Celeste cannot hear me. Oh, this is great. This is amazing about Monday morning radio and the
Rimlands. Or rebooted.
Can you hear me, Celeste?
I know what this is. I'm on the delay. This is not air.
Oh, that's it. Celeste is on delay. To make sure that when you say something that you are not saying any of the
okay,
wrong words.
How about now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent.
Okay,
excellent.
Not on delay.
Yes, I was on delay for a moment.
Oh. Okay, now we're waiting, Celeste. You put yourself in a where?
Oh, I just put myself in isolation, kind of like an isolation chamber.
Oh.
No, I didn't take advantage of my gift to the isolation chamber yet. I don't know how everybody else was making it through, and apparently the holiday wasn't enough for me. Work has become challenging, and other elements of life have become challenging, and so I thought I would kind of seclude myself and just try to catch a little bit of rest. But it's hard to escape some of the challenges we're going through, you know, when a lot of people have their eyes on the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial and were concerned about the outcome after what had happened in Wisconsin. And so you were hearing anxiety in people's voices and seeing extra stress added. And, I felt for folks. I didn't have any batteries in my magic wand. Thanks to COVID, you know, the particular size I need is on back order. So my magic wand wasn't working. But, I wished I had the power to kind of alleviate stress for folks.
Yes.
And I heard you talking about holidays. And I thinking how polarized we've become, it was no surprise to see so many articles in publications and online that dealt with how to deal with your family for the holidays, how to make it work, how to address the fact that we all don't have the same particular values, you know, our values are different.
Yes.
And I was curious to how people are making it through, because people wonder, basically, is society coming apart? And with the verdict being handed down, declaring all three men guilty of certain charges, you know, some people would want to cheer and say, you know, justice is done, but justice is the young men who were killed by Kyle Rittenhouse. Justice is Ahmaud Arbery. Justice is a lot of people still being alive.
Yes.
You know, not that their killers were brought to some form of justice, but that they were still alive. And, you know, I wanted to give people a chance to kind of, what is the word? Decompress, I guess, kind of the same way we did with the Rittenhouse verdict. This one, in a sense, is different because of both the regional concerns. I mean, Georgia is the Deep South and home to segregation, Jim Crow, et cetera, et cetera. And modern apartheid, and Kenosha was supposed to be the Great North, you know, that people try to escape to. I thought it would be interesting to kind of compare and contrast those differences, and maybe even look at the fact that vigilantism is not only on the rise, but a certain amount of acceptance is on the rise. And there we should look at some maybe unusual consequences of that.
One of the things that was on Democracy Now! this morning that many might have heard, speaking of Kenosha, Wisconsin, and the self-defense of Mr. Rittenhouse, the attention has been given to a case of a young black woman, Crystal Kaiser,
mm-hmm.
who faces homicide and other charges for killing her white sex trafficker in 2018 after he drugged her and tried to rape her when she was just 17. This man had a history of sexually abusing underage black girls, and the court initially ruled Ms. Kaiser could not use a self-defense argument. Now, an appeal court reversed the decision, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court will now consider the ruling. Again, revealing the gap in the way the so-called justice system work, and here in Kenosha, to people with different ways in which the judicial system treated them. And so people are urging that charges be dropped against Crystal Kizer, because if Mr. Rittenhouse could use self-defense, certainly a young woman who is resisting her, who had been drugged and raped by this sex trafficker, certainly if anyone had a legitimate reason to use self-defense, Ms. Kizer had. But that's the, you know, this is America, and this is how our so-called justice system continue not to work for many people.
Well, you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the Portland area. If you're in Philomath, Oregon, along the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3. In the Columbia River Gorge, it is 91.9. And in the ether, it is KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm here with Cecil Prescott and myself, Celeste Carey, and we're talking about, well, decompressing after this really tumultuous, emotionally tumultuous, mentally tumultuous week in which we saw opposing sentencing handed down. And, you know, what does that mean for us as a country if vigilantism has been supported in one form or another? And then also, I mentioned something that is what I call the unexpected consequences. And I have been following this kind of in the back of my head. And I was looking at how there are a lot of different gun clubs popping up. And yeah, we have a moratorium on discussing Second Amendment gun rights here on More Talk Radio. It's been a moratorium for a decade and a half at least. But what I wanted to mention in this regard was the fact that apparently some aspect of security has eroded and has people thinking that they really need to arm themselves. And specifically, I'm seeing clubs where Black Americans and Native Americans and members of the LGBT, et cetera, community are arming themselves and forming gun clubs. And that's concerning to me because not that they don't have the idea that if they want to shoot targets, do skeet shooting, you know, hunt for sustenance and subsistence, you know, that's not the idea. That's not my concern. My concern is that people are saying that's not why they're getting guns. They're getting guns because they feel less and less safe. Oh. And I don't see that that's necessarily going to make us feel safer or make us safer, actually, but just the fear of vigilantism. And one of the things that we talk about a lot on More Talk Radio is how to avoid the mental state that leads us into the feeling of bunkering up and hunkering down with all forms of defense weapons and offense weapons. And so I'm just curious as to how people are processing this whole issue. Some people are very happy that that the guilty verdict came down in Georgia. But it's, like I said, some of the collateral damage that we have to look for. It's seeing our idea of society basically just come apart, just unravel. Wow. And is this the tipping point? Where has it tipped? Where are we? And I'm not quite sure where or how we emerge from this, but I do know we have to think and we have to act in a way that's going to encourage compassionate, rational dialogue instead of ultra or, shall I say, meta polarization.
Yes.
That word meta has been stuck in my mind lately. Uh-huh. I wonder why.
So give us your thoughts on this in terms of where we are and where we are headed. Our numbers here, again, are 503-231-8187. And we're curious. I'm curious. We are curious about what are some of your thoughts about this in terms of our society structure, whether or not vigilantism is rising, whether or not people have lost faith in society to hold itself together, so that therefore they are creating independent, isolated groups to defend themselves.
So I, you know, one of the reasons I was curious is a lot of people, as you mentioned, you know, made it through the holidays, and I can imagine that this must have been a really charged holiday season for some folks. Like I was trying to say, I put myself in a self-imposed bubble. I just kind of like disconnected from a lot, but I watched TV, and watching TV makes you realize sometimes how much your everything in your life seems like what's put out there for you is to keep you in the mindset of being polarized and divided. But I'm sure, like a lot of folks, your whole idea was, when I do come home to see my family, I am going to try to make it as peaceable as I can. Uh-huh. You know, I want to remember the love and affection. I don't want to necessarily remember all of the, or getting to all of the stress or the stressful aspects of hanging in with folks.
Wow. And you mentioned that one way in which you managed through this holiday was self-imposed isolation.
Well, that's because I couldn't get home to visit. I missed the window for buying tickets.
But others were able to visit. So how was it? Were you able to have a peaceful, reasonable conversation or gathering with your relatives, friends who have just different way of perception of reality?
Yeah, I like that. A different perception of reality. Is that alternative universe?
Well, it seems that way to me.
Alternative reality?
Yeah. I think we're living on this same globe, and yet our perception of our realities contrasts so radically that it becomes difficult. I wonder if it becomes difficult to have meaningful conversation. Are people just shouting, or maybe on holidays being polite and just speaking loudly past one another, rather than gathering and having, I don't want to say less stressful, but meaningful conversation? How do you have a conversation with your relative who lives in a different reality? Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and share with us your holiday stories.
Yeah, or you can talk about our other topic, which is about how do we address the slow divide here. Good morning, Corey. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Cecil and Celeste. It's good to hear from you. And I wanted to discuss that question about the divide. I think at this point, looking at things in a macro sense, sadly, I think that Black people, African-American people, are sort of at this place of a permanent underclass in Western society. And I say this because I've been researching a lot of what Dr. Claude Anderson was stating about the sort of convergent social factors of just how anti-Black this country was, you know, anti-Indigenous this country was, and it was sort of built upon that. So as much as America is supposed to be one way, it's sort of been built and created on this sort of anti-Black, anti-Indigenous foundation. And also when we look at these convergent social factors, how Latinx people and Asian people are now going to be, you know, number two and number three, and therefore Black people will be number four as far as this sort of racial hierarchy, just as far as numbers pretty soon. And so basically those people, you know, quote unquote, don't feel like, well, we don't owe you anything, plus you had 400 years, so, you know, what do we care? So we're not going to be able, I don't think, to be able to penetrate those groups. And I think for many Latinx people and Asian people, what they fail to realize is the sort of systemic racism. But because you, when you look at Asian people, they're considered the model minority, they're going to benefit from that, because I still think that anti-Blackness is so prevalent in the U.S. And also, I hate to bring this up, but I think as well, quote unquote, our people, there's still a tremendous amount of, you know, sort of Black self-hate and, you know, Black self-loathing. You know, we deal with colorism. So I think just in our own house, there are so many issues that get exploited. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, us as this permanent underclass, it's sort of sad, but I think it's also sort of telling, because when the numbers come in, what are we going to do when we are, you know, there's only 13%, you know, and I think some, you know, somewhere I read the numbers are dwindling. We're going to be a small fraction of America. So what do people care? And we can have this discussion, be like, well, you know, reparations, et cetera, but if Latinos come in and Asians come in and you have white people already, it's like, well, you know, honestly, it's going to be like, we're just so lucky we give you this and that. So I honestly, sadly think it's going to get worse. And I do believe in having a sort of compassionate, rational dialogue, but that compassionate, rational dialogue really falls on deaf ears when we have, you know, when we don't have a seat at the table. Yes. And so, yeah, I've been just looking at this in a macro sense, and that's kind of why, you know, we moved to Canada and we look at different places. I think that there might be more opportunities for us there, but that's also, you know, and we've had this discussion before, that's not everybody can do that. So it's almost like it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. So we're in this really weird pickle, and it's kind of depressing, but and let's not add the holidays to that depression as well.
Before we go on, you referenced someone at the beginning. That person again?
Dr. Claude Anderson. He's an economics professor. I've been reading a lot of his work, you know, from my PhD research, and just, you know, he's talking about, you know, economics and just those numbers, and it's you know, looking at the data, he's basically right. If we're number four in this sort of hierarchy pretty soon, what power are we going to really have? And when you start looking at, you know, other issues in the Black community, it's almost as if I think the job has been done. The, you know, racism, supremacy has done a masterful job at dismantling Blackness.
You know, one of the things I would be curious about, and this would go out to allies, is do you see what we're talking about now? You know, for those who are resolutely ensconced with their head in the ground or in some other tight, dark place, you're not going to persuade them otherwise. But I'm just wondering, because I've had acquaintances and allies who have told me, oh, it's not that bad. These things don't happen. And in the past 3 years, we've been seeing a whole lot of that stuff happening, you know, and I'm wondering if allies see it, and are they willing to take a stand, say something, But then at the same time, I don't want to wait, you know, because, well, that's waiting on somebody else to give me agency that I need to take for myself, you know. But that whole thing about moving, I'm really curious if you really think Canada is a better place. One of my acquaintances is a young Somali woman who was studying to be a judge in Canada, and she I think she was either the first generation or maybe second generation in where were we? We were in Toronto, and she found Canada to be a very difficult place to navigate, even though she had quite a bit of privilege by being educated and being upper class. And so I'm wondering, I mean, sometimes I think about moving other places and then I think, how is it going to be different? And I've been all around the country and I don't see that it's different, you know, and I think, well, I should go someplace where at least, you know, it's not as bad and I can exercise some measure of freedom to go places I want to go and do things for the most part I want to do. And so I'm curious as to, you know, what did you hope to accomplish, or have you even accomplished what you saw in moving to Canada?
Well, for me to come up here, and I'm glad you mentioned that, and to be a professor up here, I agree with you. I think it's a Western issue. Mm-hmm. I think the issue is that what we see with many, quote, with Black folks in America, we see the same thing in Vancouver with the Indigenous population. So it's everywhere that you go. But mm-hmm. I can say on a personal level, I think that, and how can I say this without sounding like an elitist? I think if you're a person with education and you look like we do, you do have more opportunities. And I think it gets to the point to where people are trying way too hard, like, all right, cool, you're an ally. It's almost like, like, okay, we get it. And sometimes that comes off as false, because like you know, I'm, you know, the university I'm at, it's social justice, this, and everybody that's there has that same mindset. But also, you got to watch some of these allies too, because there's a lot of performative allyship, and you know, like, yeah, that's nice. You put social justice on your website, et cetera, et cetera. Are you going to hire a brother? You know what I'm saying? Like don't what's really going on? And I think that, you know, I was in a place to call out the systemic racism, and people are like, well, yeah, we can't just say one thing and not be about it. So it depends, especially in academia, it depends on what industry that you're in. Like I said, the anti-Indigenous racism was quite shocking up here. It was just really like that, you know,
yes.
And still surprising. Just, you don't see Indigenous people in Vancouver, and if you do see one, they're basically followed by the police. So it's interesting because mm-hmm. I hate to say this, because of who we are, and there aren't that many of us in a place like Vancouver, we can move about freely. Toronto, you know, Montreal, they have their own issues, but yeah, it's really different. But I can't say I'm happy for the choice that I made, because I think that at least here, at least they pretend, you know what I'm saying? A lot of Vancouver gives me a lot of a Portland vibe, to where, you know, they smile in your face. You know, it's that, you know, subversive racism versus just overt racism, which, you know, from the South. So it's almost like, you know, you got to pick a devil and just go with that devil that you choose.
Yeah.
I appreciate that term you use, performative allyship. I'll remember.
Yeah,
that.
I have to admit, I'm not that fond of theater. If I want theater, I'll go to the opera or the movies. But, you know, in some of my interpersonal, you know, connections, I have to say it is performative. And, you know, you take your friends to task. You take your associates to task. And, you know, you want to tell them, look, there is so much more than saying I'm your friend that you have to do. You know, it's like, well, where do you shop? Who do you do business with? What kinds of organizations do you associate with? Because if you want to tell me you're my ally, yet you associate with these groups, or you use tactics from these groups, especially when they're overtly supremacist or oppressive, then you're bogus, you know. And it makes sometimes for some strained conversation, but once in a while you get a breakthrough and you recapture your friend. And, you know, that's one of the things that keeps society from unraveling. But that is a lot of work.
Yeah, and I love that you said that, too, because that's when you know when you have an ally, when you're able to confront a quote-unquote ally, and they're able to listen versus, you know, okay, all of a sudden now you become a victim, and that white fragility comes into play. And I've had a lot of that. And that's, I call you guys, because I still love Portland, Oregon. I still have an affinity for Portland, Oregon, but I've lost a lot of friends in Portland due to that performative allyship. And I'm just like, you know, you ask me a question and I call you out, then you get upset, then you were never really an ally. You were just doing it for the attention.
Yeah. That's it. For points. Whatever kind of universe that gives you points, that's what you were doing it for.
Thank you guys so much. Like I said, yes. I see you guys all the time, so I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Corey. This is your Community Connection, where we welcome the difficult conversations, you know, from calling each other out to expressing compassion and connection. This is More Talk Radio, brought to you by KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in the Gorge. In the valley, it is 104.3. And in the ether, KBOO.FM. People ask me why I say that. Lots of semi-esoteric reasons. You know, the ether is what I think... The closest way I can kind of define it to make sense to people who keep up with science nowadays, it's that space that occupies space, you know. And a real sloppy definition would be like dark matter, dark space. It's not just the outer space. It's not just our atmosphere, but it's in all the places that energy moves and has being, and thoughts move and have agency, and, you know.
The space that occupies space.
You know how I talk.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I think. I don't know any other way to describe it. Okay. Yeah, I know. That's why they call me sister from another planet.
No, I just... I like that phrase, and it seemed... Either very, very deep or very superficial. But I think for you it's very, very deep. So I'm diving into that deep space.
Well, there's plenty of it, because once you get inside of it, you still got some to get inside of.
Amazing.
Well, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Maybe we're waxing a little philosophical or abstract for some folks. You know, maybe people are tired of talking and addressing all of this stress and division and heartbreak and what have you. And I can appreciate that. I actually have a fun topic for next week, and so I'll bring it up, and you know, we'll have that. But for today, you know, because people are still trying to process the layer upon layers that we're dealing with, we're just kind of talking about where are we now. You know, is vigilantism the move, and how should people who don't really find themselves to be, what is the word I want, aggressive,
yes,
or ultra protective or mistakenly ultra protective, you know. And by mistaken, that is definitely, and no pun intended, a whitewash, because oh gosh, what was the man who, Zimmerman, George Zimmerman, had no reason being out there trying to protect the area he was in, neither did Kyle Rittenhouse. Yet, you know, that was the stand and protect, or, you know, whatever the various titles they give that vigilanteism, where you can pick up a weapon and go shoot somebody because you think they're doing something they ought not be doing. And, you know, I see a rise in it from my perspective because, you know, all of us colored folks is getting uppity. And you know, the oppressive brutal. Yes. The oppressive and brutal white supremacist patriarchy can't have that. You know, you cannot have these uppity folks up in here. Women are uppity, you know, colored people are uppity, and how dare they? And so they're having, and what could be considered a panic attack. It's a spasm of a fear that's being played out by shooting us. And we've got to figure out how we're going to take a stand and not be dragged into that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, when you've got, I was reading about this queer gun group, and the people were saying, yep, I got to carry a gun now, and that is not my nature, and that's not my political position, but there it is. But let's hear what Robbie has to say. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, so I really appreciate the place to talk about this. When you were talking about the ethereal, I wanted one quote came to my mind, as above, so below.
That's got a few applications. Which one did you mean?
Well,
it definitely is an esoteric. I'll call it a homily for the moment.
Right. Well, I wanted to bring that up, and I definitely, one of my favorite quotes too is, when in doubt, zoom out.
I like that.
You gotta get the larger picture, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that being said, I've made it my life mission to try to stop the violence that's being perpetuated against, you know, Black lives, Indigenous lives. I've been that activist, and the only way that I found success is confronting those individuals, like at the Thanksgiving dinner, at your, you know, your uncle, the Patriot Prayer, not confronting in a confrontational way, but listening and trying to explain, you know, your own experiences, trying to explain, because psychologically I've found that I did convince one person who was hanging out with the Patriot Prayer to stop. I convinced him that there was something more, something deeper. We had a connection on a spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
Me and this guy were talking about stuff, and he no longer shows up at the Patriot Prayer stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, the people that I'm trying to support, the people I'm trying to protect, are super against even talking to the other side. And I don't think, and the thing is that's going to end, I mean, who's got, no offense, but who's got all the guns? Who's been training violently? You know, it's not our side. We're the side with compassion and love and empathy. And I think that we have to lead by example in that. And I do find that we are getting reactionary, which is just going to result in,
and more problems.
Know.
Yeah.
I think you lifted up a key point that I want us to, would like for you to share some more about. You said by listening, and I think that's a key. What do you mean by listening? How do you listen to the relative who, you know, a proud boy?
Well, another favorite quote is, well, you got two ears and one mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's hard to listen to people, and I can understand why emotions get in, you know, in the way. But one thing that I try to listen for is stuff that you can identify with that person.
Yes.
If you can hear them out, you hear their problem and you hear what they're saying, and you might not agree with how they're describing it, but if you listen to them, maybe you can find like the root cause, and then you can convert it back to like, well, wait, aren't you concerned about the poverty that's creating the crime? You know, just if you can go down to the root, you listen to them, you acknowledge their thing, and then you go deeper, and then you try to connect from that point of view, you can get maybe some leeway. But you know, there's also people that don't.
Yeah, but
I think if we got to try.
Yeah, and I think that's so important in terms of listening for finding common ground. That's sort of deep listening, because I think, you know, if we, as suggest, keep our mouth closed long enough and listening and hearing what is the reason for their concern, what is it? And as you suggested, the common ground might be you both are concerned about the safety of your children. Okay, that's something you can agree on, and then go from there. I think that's helpful.
Well, you know,
hey, thank you so much.
I was going to share a story that, you know, and maybe there's something in there that you could pull out and use for yourself. I had a mechanic, and he was a staunch conservative Republican, a white guy who had been fixing my car, and he did decent work. He did good work, because I kept coming to him, and then when he moved further out east, I went back to him. And we would sometimes hit, you know, we would, what's the word I want, come to loggerheads, you know, we'd be in disagreement about some stuff, but we always kept it civil. But I noticed over time that he started being a lot more aggressive in his language and his choice of words, and a lot more just dismissive of my ideas and what I had to say, as though, you know, he couldn't call me a snowflake, because, you know, there were certain things that I had shared with him I'd done in my life that apparently they impressed him, you know, like having been in the military and all that. But one time we had a conversation, and he was talking about how bad, you know, this Democrat president is in comparison to his, you know, his choices. And I mentioned to him, I said, well, look at it this way, Lee. Your daughter is in the military, right? And I know you're proud of her because you talk about her a lot. And, you know, we talk about what it's like to have been a woman in the military. Said, but this president who you like so much, you know, he's taken away the veterans' rights. He's really cut into veterans' rights and veterans' care. So they may talk a good game about looking after our forces, but when your daughter gets home, she's not going to be able to get any care. And it was this current seated Republican president who did that. And he started to, he opened his mouth to say something, and then he stopped and he thought about it. And it changed him quite a bit. It didn't mean that he suddenly came over to my way of thinking, but I could tell the wheels were rolling in his head, because I had related to the one value that, you know, we could express, and that was family and, mm-hmm. you know, and accomplishments. And, you know, and I wonder, I don't see him anymore, but I wonder, you know, what happened? Did he get it?
Yes.
You know, because as we know, veterans have been going through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's actually mm-hmm. very one thing that I always do, and it's really funny, is I'm very critical of the Democrats and the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
but that's because of how I'm a leftist, you know, not to be confused. But one of the first things that I'll do when I'm talking with conservatives is I bring up my dislike of the Democratic Party, and it immediately dismisses so many tactics that they'll use to be like, well, you know, this or that. And I'm
yeah.
like, oh, well, you want to talk about the president, look at, you know, the GOP. They've been gutting all the VA assistance, they've been gutting, you know, Medicare. Mm-hmm. So it's important to bring that up, because then it makes people think. But I love your show. Thank you for making people think. I'm gonna take my answers off the air and at work.
All righty. Thank you for your call. So, you know, this is something that is a ongoing theme here on More Talk Radio. We're always getting people to figure out ways to talk to each other, even if they find that it's a challenge. Yes. And I'm wondering if that was Robbie that said that last week too. It was some gentleman who called and had said, you know, it's people who are proclaiming to be left or liberal or progressive who are giving me the most mess, because when I go to, you know, protests, they don't want me talking to folks on the other side. Mm-hmm. And I've been stifled like that, and I just have this to say. That has to be one of our biggest challenges as people opposed to the right, you know, whether we call ourselves left, the, you know, liberal, progressive, whatever, is that we insist that everybody be lockstepped. And that is just as oppressive as any other dynamic that prevents people from expressing themselves and their thoughts and values having value, you know.
Yes.
And we got to stop that. we hear people saying a lot, well, how come we are always reactive on the left? You know, we're never proactive. And I think we heard that a lot when we were talking about alternatives to some of these online platforms, social media platforms. And I think one of the problems is if you don't like everything on my slate, well, I don't like you. It doesn't matter that you might be for a living wage, and you know, if you're interested in voting rights, and if you're interested in free education or expensive, affordable education. If you're not for everything I'm for, I don't like you, and go away.
Well, I think that might be related to a tendency to want to have quick, easy answers.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than exploring deeper, as an earlier caller mentioned, we'll just put people in categories and just assume you're on my side or the opposite side. And there's no area of finding mutual understanding or mutual ground. And it is so much easier just to dismiss people rather than exploring the possibility that there are things that you have in common, because who knows, I might actually enjoy something or find common ground with you, and then that just turns my world all upside down, because I thought you were the embodiment of everything I'm opposed to.
Well, you know, that's a frightening thing. I sometimes have a challenge with we'll agree to disagree, because it's superficial and it's a way of saying I'm politely telling you to shut up. But sometimes, you know, you got to find the bookmark, put a pen in it, so to speak, a place where you can say, okay, we've come this far in the conversation. Let us just stop from here and let's talk about it some more another time.
Yes.
You know, but it's not dead, because the whole idea of civil discourse is making progress, and sometimes it's incremental. It's not these giant leaps and bounds all the time.
Exactly.
Well, it's 8:51. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. Coming up at 9 o'clock is the Old Mo Variety Hour. And they are fond of saying with news, views, and reviews that you can use. That part is what I added.
And this week in the Old Mo Variety Hour, Norm Diamond is a host, and it includes segments about the climate conference that just happened, and also an interview with environmentalists. So those are very meaningful topic that we need to explore deeply. So stay tuned for the Omo Variety Hour to explore the depths and the, what where we are going after the United Nations conference on reducing climate change.
All righty. And then we have, let's see, Locus Focus, and I believe we also have 11 o'clock we have a radio zine coming up.
Okay.
So stay tuned. And I know you have heard our membership drive that ended, you know, and this is the year-end giving season.
And tomorrow is Giving Tuesday.
Yes, it is.
Who created that, but yeah, go ahead.
But I want to encourage you to think about KBOO this way. KBOO is just like getting a streaming subscription to your favorite media. So, you know, you have your media, I mean, your music platforms, you have your movie and TV platforms, you have some magazines that you subscribe to. You might even subscribe to hard copies of magazines, but you make a space for it ongoing in your budget. And we want to encourage that for you and us, that kind of relationship where it's not ongoing, just ongoing that you listen, but it's ongoing that you support us. So if you appreciate programming here on KBOO, think in terms of making it a revolving subscription. How much should you pay? Well, you could start with an hour of your pay and use that as a base to determine how much you can give. And if you can give more, please do. We really appreciate those people who are able to make large gifts for KBOO. And then you are considered, you know, one of our major donors, and you can reap all the benefits that come from that. How can you do that? Well, you can either go to kboo.fm/give and follow the instructions there. You could text the letters KBOO to number 44321, and it's not case sensitive. Or you can email us at development@kboo.org and tell us how you would like to support KBOO in a major and ongoing way. And rest assured, we appreciate it. We thank you. 52 years strong and going.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's given us freedom to do this, you know. I know I'm the first Black woman in Oregon, I think, to have a talk show, but I think we are the first Black duo in Oregon. And we have been doing this for a long time. Is it 27 years now?
Oh, gosh. So long, I can't remember.
Well, you know, it's all because of all the people who have supported us. And I just want to send out a heartfelt thanks this holiday season, this end of the year, when I look at all the things that I'm thankful for and appreciative of. And KBOO is one of them for sure, you know, not just because I'm a programmer, but because I'm a consumer. You know, I listen to the station, I look for my favorite program host, and I've been involved with the station since 1988, so, you know.
And I'm so grateful for, as Celeste mentioned, for all of you and for how you continue to not only support us, but continue to support community. And
yes,
by being a member of KBOO, you are creating a community that's working to transform not only ourselves, but to be a part of the transformation of our world. And yeah, it may seem like whoa, yeah, but you are. We are. We're making a difference.
All righty. Well, I want to thank our board operator, Ray, for making a difference for
Ray.
Us.
Yes.
And let's see, what time is it? It is 8:57. So I want to tell you one of the topics I have in mind. Like I said, it's going to be fun. So I'm just going to kind of preload the conversation chamber. I've been listening to and watching all of Zuckerberg's propaganda, you know, with the metaverse. And it sounds frightening, and yeah, it kind of is, because it speaks to quite a large amount of chutzpah, nerve, you know, that he's going to define how we see and live in this place, you know, in this space inside of space. And one of the things I thought of, because I was watching ads for, you know, the Matrix, is I was thinking about, okay, so let's talk about some aspects of our life currently that resemble that, because it had such a profound effect on our consciousness. And I wanted to just kind of mull over with everybody some ideas about the Matrix. You know, would you take the pill? You know, if you did take the pill, what kind of life are you expecting to have? You know, just conversation. And while those may not be the specific topics I picked, you know, just think about how your life sometimes seems like you are in something on this Zuckerberg up to. But that's for next week. And we hope you will be tuned in. Thank you all for listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.